Well, good morning once again. So in a piece of writing called Exodus Rabbah, there's a story about Moses. Now, Exodus Rabbah is kind of like a commentary on the book of Exodus, a Jewish commentary called the Midrash. And it was written later, probably after Jesus, but it represents kind of a way of interpreting the texts of the Hebrew Bible by story. And in Exodus Rabbah, it explains why Moses was chosen to be the first great leader of Israel, because at that time Israel was enslaved in Egypt. Moses was tending his father-in-law's flock, and he noticed that a sheep had gone missing. And according to this story, he followed the sheep, and it took a while. And he eventually arrives at the sheep, which is apparently drinking quite deeply and quickly from this little stream. And he kneels down and says to the sheep, "Oh, that's why you strayed. You were so thirsty. You must be exhausted." And he let the sheep drink, and he picked it up, put it on his shoulders, and then carried him back to the flock. And according to this, you know, later oral tradition, it was at that time that God recognized that Moses would make for a good shepherd of his sheep Israel. Moses being the first of the great shepherds. Later, we encounter King David, the great King David, the first real king. His predecessor, Saul, was more of like a tribal chieftain of sorts, and he was just a total failure anyway. And David, before he became a king, before he became the one whose line would bear the true king of Israel, he was a shepherd, the youngest of all of his brothers. And it was a time of a lot of war and uncertainty for his people, Israel. And there was among these enemies, these Philistines, a great warrior called Goliath, in Hebrew, Goliath, which sounds a little more intimidating, I think, like Goliath. I don't want to mess with that guy. That's supposed to be funny, and I guess I'm not funny at 10 in the morning, so whatever. I guess we're just going to roll with it. I'm well rested, so I don't care. And when all of the Israelite soldiers were depicted as being terrified of this famous Philistine soldier, this younger guy, David, steps up and he says, "I'll challenge him. What's he going to do?" Now, they challenged him back, saying, like, "This is a big guy. He's been a warrior since he was young. You're still a young guy. What are you going to do?" Now, there's some misunderstanding here, because there's the Sunday school story that shows David going like, "Oh, well, God will be my shield. He'll protect me." That's not what the story says. That's not how the Bible reads. In the Bible, his response is, "I'm a shepherd. As I've been watching out for my flock, I've killed lions and bears. I'm not afraid of this guy." And so he pulls out his sling, which was actually not a toy, an extremely dangerous weapon, and with immense precision and accuracy, whap, takes him out. Now, as it turns out, that makes perfect sense. Sheep are dumb, panicky animals. And it was common practice for a shepherd, among his other bags of tricks, that as he's watching over this flock, if one starts to go away, he'd have a bunch of stones in a bag, and he wouldn't hit the sheep. He'd have to be precise enough just to hit outside of it, to spook it so that it gets back into the flock. In other words, David was not this cowering little guy. He was an extremely dangerous young man. And he goes on to be the great king. Over the history of Israel, from then on, the shepherds of God's people were a pretty mixed bag. David himself had some pretty serious flaws. His son, even more so. And then from there, the kings of Israel and Judah, they don't have a great track record. After the time of the, what we would call the Hebrew Bibles, about 400-ish BC, there were times when other leaders would pop up. And especially around 150 to 200 years before the time of Jesus, they would pop up and they would start some kind of campaign to lead the people of Israel to freedom. And this certainly, every single time, involved violence, and every single time they failed miserably. Some met with some success initially. Well, the most famous of those periods of time involved the temple being desecrated by the Greeks. And from the house of Maccabeus, or the Hasmoneans, they were able to shepherd and lead the people, albeit quite violently, and they enjoyed some period of time where they were able to be at rest and rule themselves. But the temple was desecrated, and the Greeks were breathing down their necks, and so they had to cleanse the temple so they could reestablish the sacrifices to God. They did not have enough oil to do this over the course of the following week, but they decided to go for it anyway, and the oil preserved. There was enough. It was a miracle, and that's the origins of what we would know of as Hanukkah. Now, why do I say all of this, other than I think it's neat? When Jesus is giving this quite famous speech that we heard today, which the next verse, I think it's the next verse, he actually calls himself the Good Shepherd, but before that, he's describing himself effectively as a shepherd, as the guarder of the sheepfold and the gate, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. We tend to hear that by emphasizing the word shepherd. In other words, we hear Jesus say, "I am the good shepherd." Okay, so Jesus is a shepherd. However, the chapter and verse markings in the Bible do not help us in this situation, because they tend to break things up, sometimes in the wrong places. And if you go back, you'll realize that all of this is happening not just in the context of Jesus healing a man who was born blind, and this group of religious leaders named the Pharisees being very divided about him. Some liked him. Some became Christians. Others, let's just say, weren't fans. But it is all done in the context of what John calls the Feast of Dedication, otherwise known as Hanukkah. Jesus says, "I am the Good Shepherd," during the celebration of Hanukkah, when God's people remember a time when they were under the shepherds of the Maccabees, and God miraculously allowed them to cleanse their temple from pagan idolatry. Which is why when we hear, "I am the good shepherd," the emphasis doesn't go on the shepherd. I'm convinced that the emphasis goes on the word good. Listen to how this reads differently. "I am the good shepherd." In other words, a whole bunch of other shepherds have led you astray. That's also why Jesus talks about the thieves and the robbers who come in to steal, kill, and destroy. That's been their general experience. Everybody who has popped up as some kind of shepherd or leader of God's people have been violent and ultimately, given a long enough timeline, utter failures. They have all asked the people to give their lives for the sake of Israel, to give their lives for their cause, to give their lives to follow them in a very literal, mortal way. When Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd," it's as if he's saying, we're going to do things differently now. He says that he knows his sheep. He knows his sheep. He knows them by name. I did a little digging. Because when I think of like shepherd and sheep, at least in kind of Western culture, we think of raising sheep for food, for slaughter. Because, let's be honest, lamb is so good. But Israelites typically, or at least almost entirely, did not raise sheep for the slaughter. They raised them for their wool. Which means the shepherd is not raising livestock that he is eventually going to eat, or more likely going to sell, and then other people will eat. But he's raising them for their wool, which means he'll have them their entire lives. As it turns out, there are traditions about naming sheep. You would name them by characteristics. That one has a black spot, so we're going to call him Black Spot. That one has a funny leg, so we're going to call him Weird Walking. If I were a sheep, you'd call me White Glasses. Please don't call me that. I can tolerate most things that... And as it turns out, sheep are more like dogs than cats. They will actually respond to their names. You can see this on YouTube. I thought about like actually putting up a video of somebody, a shepherd, actually calling their sheep. But in my own perfectionist neuroses, I couldn't find the perfect one. So I still have work to do on me. But it's look it up. Just search it. It's amazing. And shepherds would have songs that they would sing. They would call out their names, and the sheep would, in their dumb little sheep way, make their way to them. If it was in the summertime when it was warm in Palestine, what we would call modern day, like Israel, Palestine, they would keep them out in pasture overnight, and there would be kind of like a walled-in area with one place to enter. Guess who slept there to keep all the sheep in and all the other things that would eat the sheep out? It was the shepherd. So when Jesus calls himself the gate, he's not being cute. He's actually being more literal than Jesus usually is. And later in our reading, I think it's around verse 7, Jesus says, my sheep can go in and out and find pasture, meaning that the sheep are in perfect security and safety. They have all of their needs met. For a sheep, that's as good as it gets, quite literally. When Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd," he's saying an awful lot about the way that he interacts with us, his people. It's also a warning against his sheep following by other voices. Which leads us to kind of the point. What's the difference? What does it mean to listen to the voice of Jesus versus the voice of anything else, really? Now, we have our Sunday school answers. Well, Jesus died for us. Jesus defeated death for us in the resurrection. Jesus keeps us. He wins our forgiveness, makes us whole, and brings us into the family of God, the sheepfold, if you will. That's all true. Please don't hear me say otherwise. They'll fire me. But the reality is that we hear that a lot. And if you hear something a lot, you start to unhear it. There are other ways to talk about this. Think about it this way. Jesus is the only one and is the only voice that will speak to you and will not take from you. I will say that again. Jesus is the only one that will speak to you and not take from you. As a shepherd caring for his sheep, his goal is the well-being of those sheep. Shearing and removing the wool is a good thing. It always pops up in the news every now and again where some idiot sheep got lost for like years and he's so miserable because he's so heavy with wool. But what about all the other voices, all the other shepherds? Well, in Jesus' day, they demanded their lives. And it got so bad that when war broke out after Jesus, the war that Jesus predicted, by the way, it is probable that more Jews killed Jews than Romans killed Jews because of the different leaders, attempted shepherds trying to get their way. But I would also submit that to some extent, everybody that speaks to you wants something from you. Now, that's not necessarily bad. I mean, I speak to my son, and ultimately, fundamentally, I want what's best for him. I mean, absolutely. That's what it means to be a father, right? I also like the recognition of having a really good son. I like that reputation because he's a great kid. So when I guide him, it's all about him, but yeah, a little bit's about me. Your boss talking to you at work, they want a little more productivity, don't they? I mean, they want good things for you, but human beings, it's human nature, they want something out of the deal. You give a gift to somebody because you want them to feel loved. You also want them to be really appreciative. Complimenting somebody is a great way for people to think good things about you and me. If I tell you that you're a great congregation, which I will in a little bit, at the end of the service, by the way, there's a sense in which I also want you to think, well, you're at least a passable pastor. And in fact, all of human interaction is two-way. Now, to some extent, that's just normal. I wouldn't say it's like destructively sinful or anything like that, but boy, it can be. These, as we get further away from that part, from the kind of like functional and relatively mature, we get into the non-functional and frankly dangerous. These are the manipulative people. Those who are really good at convincing you of what's best for you, even though it's actually best for them. These are the ones who have to have their family together and keeping up the good appearances, because otherwise it could threaten my reputation and I can't handle that. It's all on a spectrum. We're all guilty of this. It's the danger present in using people for our own benefit, which is a fundamental human flaw. We are all guilty of this. One of the ways that we can differentiate ourselves from Jesus is that Jesus is the one who is not guilty of this. That as the good shepherd, every word from his mouth, everything that comes from Jesus, even if it does not feel like it in that moment, is truly for you. Even if it is a stone flying from that sling and it lands near you and it scares you and coaxes you back to where you belong, that is not a fun, good feeling. I don't like that experience. But it is fundamentally good and it is for you. It is not Jesus feeding his own narcissistic supply. The good shepherd gives himself for you. The words he speaks are 100% for you. When Jesus lays down at the beginning or the opening of the sheepfold, which is another way of saying when he is the arbiter, the decider of who is in and who is out, who is part of God's family, it's for you. He's the only one. So on this Good Shepherd Sunday, on this Christ Lutheran, I'm going to call it Family Sunday again. We'll see if that sticks. Jesus is the only one whose words are purely out of love and purely for your sake. And when we receive this word in a very tangible way, in the bread and the wine, which is the body and the blood, it again is received for you. For your forgiveness, for your restoration, for your place at the table in the family of God. For your place in the resurrected life. For your place in Jesus' death. It is all for you. Amen. As you are able, I invite you to rise.